Now, the Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome, everyone, to the Brad Sessmatt Show here on a very busy Wednesday. We got a jam-packed show for you here this morning. Yeah, I'm not Brad Sessmatt. Instead, I am Devin Henry here with you on the Brad Sessmatt Show on this Wednesday morning. Like I said, man, we got a lot to get to. So we're actually, I'm going to avoid all the greens and stuff like that. I'm sorry, I'm no Brad. But your rundown here brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. Do that with life insurance, guys. Boy, we got a lot coming up. Michael McDowell, the Arizona NASCAR native, is talking to us about the Daytona 500 coming up. Brad Sessmatt will also chat with Arizona State offensive coordinator Zach Hill. And then coming up next in the next segment, the ARCA communications director Charles Krall talking about ARCA coming to Phoenix Raceway for the first time ever. So that'll be a really fun one, essentially an all-star race of all the young racers in the nation. So we'll get to all that here in just a few moments. But first, it's a very special day in the hearts of people like, I don't know, Jordan Hamm. Pitchers and catchers reporting this week to camp, and so we bring in Jordan Hamm live from Salt River Field. Spring training is here, Jordan. I'm sure that you're just a little bit excited, you know?
Devin, it is a beautiful morning here. Baseball season is officially back. Hopefully we can talk less about scandals and trades not going through and trash cans and can really focus on the baseball. But yeah, pitchers and catchers here reporting at Salt River Field. So always a good day when you can say that.
So let's not talk about trades that didn't go through then. Let's talk about trades that did go through. And of course, we talked about the Dodgers acquiring some guys last week here on the show. But let's talk about the guy that when I scrolled through my Twitter feed, I thought it was a joke. Madison Bumgarner to the Arizona Diamondbacks. Straight out of the gate, what are the expectations here for the fans? When should he be reporting? How often do you think he's going to be on the field for the fans? What are the expectations out of Mad Bum here in 2020 spring training?
Well, I think the expectation is for Mad Bum to be there number one. And as for questions about him reporting, I'm looking at him right now. So he is here. He's going through his workout with the rest of the pitchers that just kicked off. I wasn't able to talk to him in media availability earlier this morning. Hopefully we'll get him after the workout. But yeah, he should be the number one, not to necessarily replace Zach Greinke, but I think he's a guy that can still pitch at a very high level. And they got him at a pretty reasonable deal when they signed him as a free agent. And a lot of that money will be backloaded. So he actually is taking a bit of a smaller salary this year. And part of that reason was so the Diamondbacks could have some financial flexibility to go get additional players like they did with Starling Marte to make that trade. And then you have quite a few players coming off the books, most notably Yasmani Tomas after this year. So that frees up a little bit. So he's already shown some dedication to this team to, kind of put some money off to the side towards the end of his contract to make sure that the Diamondbacks are competitive. And I think he's going to be pretty beneficial for a guy like Robbie Ray, for a lot of these young pitchers, Alex Young, Luke Weaver, Merrill Kelly. I mean, we can go down the list. Really, aside from Mad Bum and Mike Leake, and to a degree, Robbie Ray, like, this is a pretty young pitching staff. So to have a guy who's one of the best competitors in baseball and a guy who's done it for so long on this staff, I think that's pretty crucial for this young pitching staff.
So just looking at it initially, how does Mad Bum kind of change up the bullpen rotation this year?
I think that, obviously he's a guy that can go deep into games, so that's going to help. We saw last year, I think, a lot of the pitchers didn't quite go as deep as maybe in previous years, and I think that put a strain definitely on the bullpen a little bit. But they also brought in a couple of arms, Junior Guerra, as well as Hector Rondon, that can help kind of complement that piece. We haven't heard officially from Torey Lovello whether Archie Bradley's going to be that closer. He filled that role towards the end of the year last year. But every spring training that we've seen from Mike Hazen and Torey Lovello since they joined the Diamondbacks, the closer has been a competition. So it wouldn't surprise me if today, in their media availability later today, they say, it's going to be, Archie's probably the front runner, but he's got to go earn it rather than just naming him. So I think that they've added some necessary pieces. They also have, if Robbie Ray is in fact here on opening day, they have probably six or seven starting pitchers. So one of them can move to the bullpen and be kind of a long relief type arm as well. And that's where they've had some success with the TJ McFarlands, the Matt Cooks of the world the past couple of years. So I think the bullpen is certainly, I think, a little more certain than maybe it was in previous years. But also this time last year, I was saying that the strength of the team was the bullpen, and that was really the group that struggled the most throughout the year.
So for the fans, name the fans a couple of guys when they go out and see their D-backs during spring training, a couple of guys that they need to have their eye looking out for that, you know, isn't your usual starting nine.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few interesting guys that are, you know, on the 40-man or non-roster invitees because of the depth that the minor league system now has for the Diamondbacks. And a couple of guys that were in that trade for Zach Greinke, some big-time prospects that will be in the big league camp, at least to start spring training, is Seth Beer. He's a power-hitting first baseman, also can play some outfield. Corbin Martin's a guy that was a highly touted prospect. And Mike Hazen said when they were able to get him included with the trade that he had Tommy John last year. And he said if he didn't have that, there's no way we are able to get that player. So they think he has a very high upside. And then J.B. Bukauskas is the other one that's in camp from that trade as well. So I think those are a couple of guys. Also, I got to chat with Edwin Jackson this morning, former Diamondback. He's back with the club. He's played for 14 major league teams, like a wild career that he's had. Threw a no-hitter with the Diamondbacks and threw about 150 pitches in that, walked eight guys. So it was pretty funny kind of catching up with him and how he would joke that, you know, he goes, I forgot that I had a no-hitter going because I walked the bases loaded in the first inning. And, you know, umpires were looking at me like, why are you still throwing? And then they look up at the scoreboard and see that there's zero hits up there. So he was very fun to catch up with. More of that content's going to be on Sports 360 AZ here later today. But, yeah, I think those are three or four names, you know, not the usual suspects that you can keep an eye out for.
So plenty going on, obviously. Before I let you go, the latest recruiting roundup hit the deck on Sports 360 AZ yesterday. What's going on the recruiting front? There's only one more signing day, if you will, coming up in spring. But what's going on, whether that's a couple of guys left over or whether that's, okay, we're looking at 2021 now?
Yeah, it's interesting. We've kind of shifted our focus to 2021. On this most recent recruiting roundup, we did five names you should know that aren't necessarily the usual suspects that have been on our recruiting roundup. So, you know, obviously there are three or four high-profile Saguaro guys, you know, quite a few Queen Creek players, things like that. It's kind of who's that group that may have a couple offers but could blow up. So that was a fun one to put together. A lot of talent in this class as well. And then the other kind of big news is Mel Tucker moving on from Colorado to Michigan State. He had multiple times said that wasn't going to happen. It sounds like Michigan State just continued to offer him more money, more opportunities. Now he's at Michigan State, so that means Jason Harris and Brendan Rice, two local players signed with Colorado here in December. Could there be a situation where maybe they start to look elsewhere? They historically, if they do transfer after signing, they have to sit out a year. So it'll be interesting to keep an eye on those guys moving forward because both of them really said what set them apart was Mel Tucker's vision and just his demeanor as a coach. So now that he has moved on, the dominoes kind of fell when Mark D'Antonio decided to retire from Michigan State, and that opened up a spot. Mel Tucker took it after, you know, quite a few times saying that he was going to stick with Colorado, but I think the offer was just too good for him to pass up. So now that leaves a new head coaching position in the Pac-12 this late in the cycle, and that could affect quite a few things. And the way the transfer portal has been, where guys want to play right away, they may look elsewhere. So that's something I'm also kind of looking into this morning with both of them, trying to get a hold of them and see kind of where they stand, because this came out 11 p.m. last night, really kind of rocks the college football world. So that's another thing to look for, at least on this 2020 class.
All right, Jordan, we'll let you get back to studying the diamond now. But, of course, thank you for your time. Plenty of updates coming on Sports 360 AZ, recruiting, spring training, you name it. Be sure to keep a lookout for Jordan Hamm, wherever the heck he might be, day in and day out, going everywhere all around. So, Jordan, thanks again for your time, man. We'll see you back in studio and back on, of course, Brad Sesmatz Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona all week long.
Sounds good, man. Thanks.
That is Jordan Hamm, our baseball expert, our recruiting expert, our on-location expert, our expert here at Sports360AZ.com. All right, I'm going to send it straight to a break because, boy, I tell you what, we got us a full show coming up next, chatting with the ARCA Communications Director, Charles Krall. Now, ARCA is coming to Phoenix Raceway for the first time ever. Yeah, we're talking a lot of racing as the Daytona 500 comes up on Sunday. We're already looking at the Fan Shield Speed Fest coming up on March 6th, 7th, and 8th. First race is ARCA. I'm calling it an all-star series. We'll talk about why more coming up with Charles Krall. We're watching here on Sports360AZ.com, the Brad Sesmatch Show, but Devin Henry hosting this week. On March 6th, the renowned ARCA Menards Series comes to Arizona for the first time ever. Phoenix Raceway will be hosting the inaugural race in a new Sioux Chiefs Showdown Series, a point series inside the ARCA Point Series. I'd kind of put it as an all-star series, if you will, combining three series into one. To talk a little bit more about that for their next National Series race, we call the Minister of Propaganda, so called on his Twitter at least, the ARCA Menards Series Communication Managers, Charlie Krall. Charlie, thank you for joining us, man. Man, you got to Daytona. You're the first guy in the media room, like, every day. You had the Daytona Lucas Oil 200 on Saturday. The Busch Clash on Sunday. Then the opening ARCA East Race of the Year that you announced on NBC Gold. When did you sleep, or am I just cutting into that time right now?
You actually are cutting into that time right now. It's been a very busy week. We had, as you said, all of that action. I squeezed in a World of Outlaws sprint car race while I was down there as well. And then yesterday, drove home. So it was a 16-hour ride in the car yesterday, and just trying to get my bearings back. And we've got a short week in the office this week, and then we're going to be right back out west for the ARCA Menards West opener at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, which we're very excited about. And then all of our attention is going to get turned to that race over at Phoenix Raceway, the first Sioux Chiefs Showdown event. And we are expecting one of the best entry lists we've had in 5 or 6 years for that race. It's going to be fantastic.
So this combines essentially three different series, the ARCA East, West, and National Series, which last year were all essentially separate entities from one another. And if it looks anything mm-hmm. like last year's West race, when you have Ty Gibbs, Ty Majeski, Derek Krause, just a bunch of the best young racers in stock car racing. But obviously a lot has changed. NASCAR acquired ARCA 2 years ago. 2020 brings those two NASCAR regional series under the ARCA umbrella, under the ARCA banner. What kind of impact has this had on ARCA, even off the track, when it comes to scheduling, the ladder of communications, everyone talking, stuff like that? How has ARCA changed internally, not just the product that we're going to see on the track, even rules package and the rule book?
Right. So there has been a lot of changes. And internally, you know, it was interesting. We had our a meeting down at Daytona with our personnel, some of that key NASCAR personnel. And, you know, my boss has said, you know, hey, we were a company of 10 people, and now we're a company of thousands of people. So it's an adjustment period for everybody. And it is, you know, there has been some procedural changes that we have had to adapt to. And the interesting thing in there is that they have taken a lot of the things that we have done very successfully for 68 years and have merged that into the way that they do things. So it is a two-way street, just like any time there's any sort of acquisition, and that's been a lot of fun. The rule book, you know, there were 30-some-odd things in that rule book that needed to be standardized between the two different series, the East and West and the ARCA Menards series. And, you know, they hammered those out over the course of a couple of years. They've got an equivalency formula for the ARCA Ilmor engine and the Yates NASCAR spec engine that we think is going to level the playing field very well. As a matter of fact, Sam Mayer, who won the East race at New Smyrna on Monday night, was using that Yates spec engine. So, yeah, we think that we've got a pretty good platform here. It's going to give a lot of young drivers the opportunity to start their professional racing career off on the right track. That's really what we want to do, is we want to be that first step between grassroots racing that you might see throughout the Saturday night short tracks all across the country. We want to be that first launching point to a professional career as a professional race car driver.
So we can see the evolution of Arca here, and this, I mean, it's essentially an expansion. So what direction is Arca going? What does the future look like for Arca?
Well, I think that what you see right now is what the future is going to be for the foreseeable future here. I think we're going to be that first developmental step, you know, what you need to do before you come and run in the Gander Truck Series, what you need to do before you want to go and run in the Xfinity Series. They're going to want to see that you can do this on the ARCA level. You know, our champion last year, Christian Eckes, is the perfect example. You know, Christian ran with us, you know, before he turned 18 and was eligible to go race on all the super speedways. He ran with us, you know, on the short tracks for 2 or 3 years. And then he finally turned 18, was able to come and compete for a championship, won the championship. Now he's got a full-time truck ride with Kyle Busch Motorsports. So, you know, that's exactly what we want to do. That's exactly what we want to be. We want to be the launching pad and the development point for tomorrow's stars. And, you know, we could go through the list of drivers that, you know, got their start in the ARCA Menard Series over the course of the years. And, you know, whether you're talking Benny Parsons or Davey Allison or Chris Buescher or, you know, Ty Dillon, Alex Bowman, you know, he's starting on the front. Both of the front row starters of the Daytona 500 ARCA Menard Series graduates. So it's something we're very proud of, and that's what we look to continue to do into the future.
And one part of this evolution brings me to my burning question coming up on March 6th. ARCA is traditionally a Midwest, Eastern United States racing series. I mean, Kansas was the furthest west you guys went last year, and that was the end of the year for the championship. Why in the world are you guys hauling all the way out to Phoenix in March for your second race of the season? What in the world brought that up?
So with the blending of the East and the West and the invitation to those teams to compete in the Sioux Chief Showdown, it wouldn't be very fair if all of those showdown races were up and down the East Coast and here in the Midwest. We want to make it so that a West team can compete, and it feels like they are a part of the deal. You know, for a long time, the West teams have kind of felt like they've been way out on the left side of the country and haven't really been involved, and we want to change that, you know, and that's no one's fault necessarily. It's just geography, you know, but we want to change that. We want to let them know that they are a part of this. They're included, and we want them to feel like, you know, we want you to come and race with us in these showdown races, and to make it so that not only there is a race right there in their backyard, but hey, it's the first one of these.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of cool. And we do expect to have a pretty solid number of those Western based teams come and race with us when we head out to Phoenix Raceway on March 6th. And we expect some East teams to come along as well. It's a great opportunity for them to come and get some laps. And that's what this is all about, is giving those young drivers a developmental step, an opportunity to come out and get laps at racetracks they're going to compete at in trucks, in Xfinity, in Cup, and all three of those series race at Phoenix. So it's important for us to be there. And, you know, it really is just more of a fairness thing. You know, we really would like to have those West teams come East and race in the Midwest and race on the East Coast races for those showdown events. But, you know, we need to feel, we need to give those teams an opportunity to do that on their home turf as well.
So I've been able to talk to track president of Phoenix Raceway, Julie Giese, a little bit when it was first announced that ARCA was coming to Phoenix in March. And that was before the Sioux Chief Showdown was even announced. So the showdown was pretty well in the works already once that announcement came then, right?
It was. It's been something that we obviously have been working on behind the scenes for a long time. And we had what was known as the Sioux Chief Short Track Showdown, or the Sioux Chief Short Track Challenge, which kind of crowned the champion of the short tracks. And Sioux Chief was a great partner for that, and they invested a lot of money and invested a lot of resources in promoting that. And they really stepped up to the plate here with this. They are really all in on this. And, you know, when they saw what was going to be happening here, they were like, we really want to be a part of this. So we knew that this was happening for quite a while before we were able to get all the I's dotted and T's crossed. And, you know, we're very happy that we're going to kick that off at Phoenix. It's a great racetrack. They put a lot of money in renovations. I think I put something like $120 million in my first draft of the story that we wrote, and they corrected me. They're like, no, 176 million, right? Or 178.
I can't even imagine what I would do with that kind of money. And I mean, I guess you can see what it does to a racetrack, right?
Yeah. I could, yeah, very easy. We wouldn't be having this conversation right now, that's for sure. sitting on an island somewhere. But no, in all seriousness, they have. They've made a huge investment in that racetrack to make the fan experience a much better experience. It was already a great experience. I loved Phoenix Raceway prior to the rebuild, and it looks like it's even better. I haven't been there in about 12 years, so I'm really looking forward to getting back there. It should be a really fun time, and I'm happy that we're getting a chance to take the Arkham and Art Series out there. I think that's exactly the type of racetrack that we need to be running on, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you guys over here. I'm sure that most places in the Midwest and the East Coast won't have 80-degree weather the first weekend of March, so I'm sure you guys will probably welcome that a little bit when you guys come here. But just like we mentioned, Two Chief Showdown, March 6th, the first race of the Point Series, second race of the National Series. I mean, I've mentioned it at the top of this. This sounds more like an all-star race of the best young NASCAR drivers in the nation. It was something similar like we saw last November in the West Championship when Ty Majeski, Corey Heim, Ty Gibbs, who eventually won the race, battled against Haley Deegan and Derek Kraus and Jagger Jones. Except I'm thinking the car count's probably going to be a little bit more. But what is the expectation when you bring all these guys together, most of which have never raced against each other, put them on a one-mile oval with a dog leg that you can cut through and just put a beeline straight through turn number one? What's the expectation there? I mean, a lot of the East drivers couldn't even race Daytona, the Lucas Oil 200, because they weren't old enough yet. So that's going to be the first experience for guys like Gio Celazzi to take on a guy like Michael Self.
Right. So we don't know.
that's the best part, right?
That's the answer. We don't know. We're going to find out. All of these guys are, I say guys, all these guys and girls are highly qualified. You know, Haley Deegan is as qualified a race car driver as you are going to find. You know, she is extremely talented. She's very skilled. She doesn't give an inch on the racetrack. I can't wait to see what we're going to have play out at Phoenix. It's just going to be fantastic. And I wouldn't be surprised if Haley Deegan comes away with the win, but she's going to have, you know, she's got, there's a lot of great competition. Michael Self, Jagger Jones, Gio Selzy, Drew Dollar, we will see Chandler Smith in action for the first time here in 2020. These drivers are elite talents, and it's going to be really difficult for anybody to take away that win. And that's why we're excited to get out there. We can't wait to see who does it.
Absolutely. And of course, being with the Cup and Xfinity Series, you never know who might want to do some Friday night light racing. And also, we just chatted with Michael McDowell, and he mentioned, you know, the 2007 ARCA runner-up and the 2007 Rookie of the Year. I said, what do we got to do to get you back in ARCA? And he said, well, sponsor. And so it wasn't a hard no. So that's good to know.
It's not a hard no. I think that, the great thing about ARCA is, I mean, anybody can show up and build a race car and come out and race, but you know, it really is a developmental series. I mean, we're not going to see Kevin Harvick building an ARCA car to come in and steal the win at Phoenix. You know, that's just not going to happen, you know, but we do from time to time see, you know, people who raced here in the past, who had a very good experience here. They do like to come back and not only come to compete for the win, but, you know, they want to help us put on a show for the fans. You know, I think that we will see, there is a recently retired Cup driver that I think is going to come and race with us three or four times here in 2020. And it's far be it from me to steal that announcement, but I'm going to tease it here a little bit. And, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun. You know, it's all about, is just bringing this wide range of skill level, this wide range of background, and putting them all on the racetrack together and see who comes out on top.
Excited to bring the ARCA Menard Series to Arizona for the first time ever, March 6th, a part of the FanShield Speed Fest weekend here at Phoenix Raceway. Charles, stay on the line for just a couple more minutes. But for now, we're going to head on over to a break. Coming up next, Brad Sesmat talking with offensive coordinator for Arizona State football, Zach Hill, coming up next year on the Brad Sesmat Show. And of course, Charles, thank you for your time. Can't wait for ARCA to come to Phoenix.
So now that National Letter of Intent Day is behind us, Super Bowl's behind us, we're in this period where you're saying, Brad, there's really not much going on, and I would vehemently disagree. Did you know that on Monday the 24th of this month, spring football starts at Arizona State? And many of you are saying, of course we know. We're big Sun Devil fans. Well, a lot of fans don't. And there's new faces. And one of those new faces that, from what I'm hearing, is going to make a tremendous impact is about to join us now via Skype. And that's the new offensive coordinator, Zach Hill. 4 seasons at Boise State. He is now part of ASU. And I appreciate you coming on board. I'm just curious, did you have a huge garage sale to get rid of all the Boise State gear because it didn't match? It's been 2 months. How has this transition, seriously, how has this transition been for you, Zach?
It's been great. But yeah, I had to get rid of a lot of Boise State gear and handing up on all my ASU gear right now. So the transition's been, transitions are never easy, but into the house. My family's down here now and my 2 kids, and so it's going well, getting ready for spring ball.
How did this come to be? I guess I'm curious on the timeline of when did you get the call, you go back and forth. How did this all come to be?
Well, we were in our championship week at Boise. So we were playing Hawaii in that championship game and got a call from Coach Edwards. And it was just a quick conversation. It was letting me know that he was interested, and hopefully we could find a time to get down here and see things and be able to talk some football and just see kind of what happens with it. And he was great understanding what the week was for us at Boise State and the game planning and trying to finish our season off the right way with the championship. And and then got a chance the next week after we won the championship to get down here and interview and talk a little ball. And then it worked out from there.
Was it a no-brainer?
No-brainer for me. Yeah. This has always been – ASU's been a dream school for me to coach at. Loved the area. Loved the history, at Arizona State. And from being in the Pac-12, but also just what offenses, can be here. And the appeal for quarterbacks, I think, is a high level for sure.
Zach Hill with us, new offensive coordinator at Arizona State. They open spring football here on the 24th. Offensively, if you were to paint a big picture for fans of what they're going to see out on the field, we'll get specific about Jaden and players, but what are they going to see out on the field?
I think the biggest change, from a fan standpoint and what they're going to see in practice and then on the field, game day, is just, more shifts and motions, more personnels, some formations that may be different, and trying to just stress the defense in a lot of different ways, with some tempo things, with some cadence changes, with some, odd formations, and then the shift in motion piece being the major change.
You get to players 8 hours a week in the offseason, if I'm correct. Is that correct? It's 8 hours per week?
Yes.
Yeah, so in 8 hours a week, what can you change with Jaden Daniels one-on-one in this period of time? It's got to be on the field, but so far in interacting and wanting to see some things with Jaden Daniels, what can you say?
We still have that meeting time, so that's built into the schedule. So they're doing the conditioning and strength training stuff, and then we build some meeting times in as well. So obviously, a lot of that is just from a knowledge standpoint of understanding the new terminology, what we're going to do as an offense, watching cutups, getting ready for our installs and things like that. You can talk fundamentals. We'll get to some quarterback fundamental things, but we can't work with them on the field, at least with the ball. So there's things, we can do without a ball just to prep for the offensive structure and how things are going to get called in and things like that. But from a development standpoint, it's semi-limited.
This may be an obvious question, but you may have a different view than others. What do you like most about Jaden Daniels?
Well, he is very calm, cool, collected. Obviously, he's a great playmaker. Once he gets into that game mode, that's where he loves to be. So, and he's one of those guys that, as an offensive coordinator, maybe we make the wrong call, but he can make that wrong call into the right situation.
Sure.
And you love those quarterbacks that can create and do their thing.
What about improvements out of Jaden Daniels? You look at him and say he could get better in this area.
Yeah, again, his is his first year of college football, and obviously had a great year. So there's a lot of things to improve on and develop. And I mean, he's going to develop all the way through, but, you know, initially just looking at, you know, tightening up his throwing motion a little bit with his mechanics and, you know, his run footwork and just, you know, how we're teaching certain things offensively is just going to be cleaning some of that stuff up. But, you know, from a playmaker standpoint and what he can do on the field, I mean, he's going to be able to do a lot of, do a lot of those creative things that you know are oftentimes tough to coach. So it's really going to be honing in the skills and the fundamentals and technique within the offense and then letting them go out there and be a playmaker.
Talking with Zach Hill, offensive coordinator at Arizona State. They open spring football later this month. In terms of other personnel that you are looking forward to working with, you may want to go by position. You may want to mention a player or two, not leave anybody out. But do you have some other names that you're excited to and seeing tape? Like, you know what, this could be interesting, Brad.
Well, I think Frank Darby, from a wide receiver position standpoint, having some big play ability, some deep threat ability, and he's got some experience. You know, and I know Jaden has that connection with him from a receiver standpoint. And then obviously we're adding a lot of pieces, you know, to this offense. So we're adding some grad transfers that are, you know, unproven for us, but have that experience for other teams. So getting those guys in from an O-line standpoint is really big just from a leadership. And then, you know, we've got a lot of younger guys in that O-line. So adding two seniors that have, you know, played at a high level, have experience, you know, into that mix, that's going to make that O-line so much better. And then adding some of those, you know, young guys, you know, we've got four wide receivers that are highly touted wide receivers that, you know, obviously got to learn it and develop.
Yep.
But you've got some playmakers there, and then two running backs who are on campus right now with Daniel Nagata and Diamante. And those guys are learning it right now, getting in the mix with the strength and conditioning program. They're going to be factors for us. And, you know, I know all of them are excited to get into spring ball here and show what they've got. So, and then, you know, tight end wise, Nolan Matthews, you know, being a big body guy that can run and catch and be a deep threat, but also can, you know, be a factor for us in the run game at the tight end position. So those are a few of the guys that we're looking for that are going to be exciting to be able to work with.
Before I get you out of here, Zach, if you're talking about off the field and the recruiting aspect of it, because it all works together, obviously, in the college world, how do you see yourself in the home in terms of recruiting? Do you like that part of it? Do you like being with the coach? I know you could probably say it's all working together as one, but some coaches like the individual, some like the group setting. What do you think your strength is when it comes to recruiting?
I think it's a mixture. You know, I like recruiting and the fact that, you know, you're picking your guys and trying to get them to come and see the value of what you're doing there, you know, and there's a lot of different aspects of that, whether it's the program, whether it's the coaches, whether it's the type of offense, whether, you know, some of the history stuff and the development. And, but, you know, I think we work from a staff standpoint and trying to hit guys that, you know, that we want here. From a staff standpoint, but then it's also the individual connection. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, that position coach really connecting with those guys and understanding that they're going to be developed. And you know, because from a day-to-day standpoint, you're going to be with those coaches, you know, in the meeting rooms and on practice. And so the individual connections, I think, are really important.
Appreciate the time and the insight. We'll see you out there on the 24th as ASU practice gets started with spring ball. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks for having me.
Zach Hill with us, four seasons at Boise State, now at Arizona State, the new offensive coordinator for Herm Edwards. And again, practice gets started later this month. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sesmat.
The Daytona 500 this Sunday coming up on Fox. And to help us get ready for it, we have our first repeat customer on the inside lane. Joining us is a back-to-back International Kart Federation champion, the 2004 Star Mazda Series champion, and the 2007 ARCA Rookie of the Year, entering his 13th NASCAR Cup Series season, driver of the Front Row Motorsports, loves travel stops number 34, Ford Mustangs from Glendale, Arizona. It's Michael McDowell. Michael, thanks for joining us, man.
That was a great introduction right there.
Hey, I need a great introduction for one of the best super speedway racers that we got out there. And, of course, so proud to have you representing the state of Arizona. And, of course, you got the American flag always on your helmet as well. So a great representative of Arizona and NASCAR as a sport. But as the Daytona 500 rolls on up in 2020, I know that the off season is not just sitting around driving a regular car. It's intense workout. So how did you attack this off season, and what were you working on this year to get better?
Yeah, our cars are physical to drive. They're very hot. The races are very long. Different than other sports where, I'm not trying to run a 440 in 5 seconds. I'm trying to stay in the seat as long as I can and not fatigue and keep your heart rate and your brain working well for 5 hours when it's 130 degrees. So, just trying to, in all areas, just stronger and faster and lighter, and all those things are better for race cars. And, our off season's really the time where you can focus on something because you're not going back and forth from city to city and, flying and traveling and staying in hotels and all those things. So, being able to be home and be grounded get a good established routine and just get ready for the season.
Looking at your stats at Daytona, 3 top 10s in your last 5 starts, including a top 5 in last year's 500. So many people go, this is a race about luck, it's best of the draw, and right place, right time definitely helps, but there's a method to all the madness. So how do you successfully, with all your success over these past few years, study and prepare for the Daytona 500 and just super speedway races in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what you said is definitely true. Is, the perception is that it's a lot of luck, and there's no doubt that that luck is involved and circumstances and all those things that aren't always in your control. But, at the same time, just seeing that the same 10 or 12 guys run up front and win these races, brought me to the realization that there's more to it than just luck, because how are these guys the same guys that are up there every time? And so just becoming a student, watching video, studying video and data, and being able to look through all that and see where guys position themselves and how they approach the race and moves that they make and moves that they don't make. And no different than you normally see the same guys up front. You normally see the same guys cause wrecks too. And so you just learn from those things and you pay attention to them and you apply that to your style and your rhythm. And you just kind of come in with a plan and try to execute that plan.
And I do want to jump from the first race of the season to the last race of the season. I know it's a little bit far ahead, but your own home track hosting championship weekend, Phoenix Raceway, on November 6th, 7th, and 8th. There was a $178 million flushed into it just about a year ago. What does that say about your home track, that 1 mile oval with the dog leg, to have the championship race come at the end of 2020?
Yeah, it's so neat. I mean, it's incredible. Not just because of the renovations that have taken place there, but just over the years, just the fans have been so loyal to NASCAR and to Phoenix Race in particular. If you've been out there, you've seen it with, just thousands of campers and motorhomes and sold out crowds. And we've just been really steady out at Phoenix, where other places, as the economy's changed and things have changed over those 10 or 15 years, you see a lot of ups and downs, but Phoenix has been really steady and the fans deserve it. And it's a great city, a great town. And everybody at Phoenix Raceway and Julie and her staff, worked really hard with those renovations. And I think that, it's going to be a big event and it's going to be a fun race. And hopefully, everybody will embrace it from the city standpoint and really make it a fun week.
Now, we don't have a ton of time left, but I do want to step away from the track. Now, Mac McLeod, your PR representative, told me that about 3 weeks ago, you helped one of America's heroes, a homeless veteran, off the streets into a home. Take us through how that came about and that experience.
Yeah, it was really, it was sparked from actually my neighbor that had just built a relationship with a veteran that he was just struggling. He's struggling in life, just readapting to, being a civilian again and struggling from PTSD and just needed a little bit of help. And so I was able to help move and help him get some furniture and get moved into an apartment. And, you know, he's doing it all. He just needed a little bit of help get going and start a new job, and he's doing great. And just small things like that that are really, special. I mean, our men and women that go and fight for our country and fight for our freedoms, and they come back, and a lot of them are wounded physically and mentally, and we just got to do a good job of taking care of those that have served and continue to serve, and we can all do something.
Love that, man. I'm so glad you got that experience. That's really awesome. We're running out of time here. Talking with Arizona's own NASCAR driver, Michael McDowell. Got to give you a quick time real quick. Some rapid-fire questions for some rapid-fire answers. You ready to set quick time, Michael?
Yeah, let's do it.
All righty. What is your go-to purchase at your favorite Love's Travel Stop?
Celsius energy drink. Got to stay awake.
All right. I got some trivia for you. The number 34 has reached victory lane only 4 times in NASCAR history, including your teammate David Ragan. But the number 34 is also responsible for winning the inaugural NASCAR Strictly Stock Series race in 1949. Name that driver.
No idea.
1949, the first race of the season at the Charlotte Fairgrounds. Jim Roper driving a hot Rod Lincoln.
All right. I'll have to remember that.
And hopefully we can get one more win on that number 34 this year. I feel like this might
be
the year. One last thing. ARCA is coming to Phoenix Raceway for the first time ever. As we mentioned, you were the Rookie of the Year in 07, also the series runner-up. What can we do, Michael, to get you back in an ARCA car when it comes to Phoenix?
Yeah, that would be awesome. I would love to do it. We just got to find a sponsor. That's what drives these deals. Got to have a partner for it. You help me find a partner, I'll race it for sure. No doubt about it.
I will try my best with my empty bank account to try to find you a sponsor, Michael. I appreciate it.
No. Sounds good.
You start 12th in duel number 2 on Thursday. The Daytona 500 on Sunday on Fox. Of course, the Fan Shield 500 at Phoenix Raceway, March 6th, 7th, and 8th. That does include ARCA. And, of course, the championship, November 6th, 7th, and 8th here at Phoenix Raceway. Michael, always appreciative of your time. Man, I'm feeling like this year might be the year, man. Room for you all year long. Best of luck, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That was Michael McDowell here on the Inside Lane. I'm Devin Henry. Be sure to keep it to Sports 360 AZ all year long for all your NASCAR knowledge.